The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
This is what happens when they realize that most people are absolutely, completely asleep, dumbed down, and don't realize what's going on. They can say the truth right in front of your face, and you won't even hear it, for the most part.
Earthquake in 140 years, John.
Look at all that. And it's not over yet, because we've got the Eclipse earthquake coming up on Monday. As Deborah Ross was telling us, it's going to be a transformative experience for anybody who is in the area of totality.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your co-host. Today is Sunday, so it's time for the Limeys for a show entitled The Show at the End of the Universe with my co-host Maleficus Scott. So let's bring him up right now. Maleficus, are you with us?
I am, for potentially the last time.
There you go, exactly. And the time is 10:10 a.m. as I'm speaking here in the UK. So welcome to wherever you are listening throughout the world. And that clip you just heard during the show intro segment was of Richie from Boston's latest video. Mainstream straight up telling us another quake is coming on the 8th. That you can find on his BitChute channel. Now, the newscast you heard during that clip, because of course I can see the video and you can't, was from Fox News, and the headline in red along the bottom said, "Strongest earthquake in 140 years hits northeast." And that is of course related to these earthquakes going off in New York and New Jersey in recent days. And today's show title, The Show at the End of the Universe, relates to the solar eclipse illuminated by the Devil Comet, which is due to take place tomorrow, April the 8th, that many people in the independent media have been talking about for weeks now. And here are some bits of recent headlines relating to April the 8th from beforeitsnews.com. The 2024 solar eclipse and insane prophecy events are coming. Eclipse 2024, unlocking Pandora's box, the gates to hell. April 8th eclipse predictions, epic events incoming. April the 8th, the emergency dark plan exposed, you need to know. April the 8th, solar eclipse biological attack, do not go outside that day. Will the solar eclipse be a cataclysmic event? Emergency deployment of hazmat suits and military forces for the eclipse, the hidden threat they're preparing for. Eclipse sickness narrative to hide next plandemic. People will be acting odd or animalistic after solar eclipse. Ooh, sounds like it passed over London years ago. And finally, new warning. We just got a letter. Stay far away from solar eclipse gatherings. So we've decided to go full J.G. Ballard-style dystopia on today's show, title The Show at the End of the Universe, which of course is a reference to the second Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy book, The Restaurant at the End of the Universe by Douglas Adams. And the show image is from the X channel Jacob Israel 71, which you can find at twitter.com/JacobIsrael71, all one word. So Maleficus, are you at all worried about the solar eclipse? Over to you.
No, is like probably the main answer I can give you. Just a single word answer, really easy one. No, really, I'm not.
No, that's interesting. I'll get onto it later. I'll just drop in our little show image that I found. So I thought that was quite good that that guy put together, Jacob Israel 71. So thank you for us poaching that off your Twitter channel. And yeah, what else? Something I'm thinking of doing here. I don't know if this works or not, because as you know, Maleficus, I've been recently started listening to The People's Voice.
Yes.
On they've got a Rumble channel, and I was wondering if it was worth reading out their headlines for the previous week, because we tend to only go with mainstream stuff and you know, comment on that, because you do get a bit concerned these days if there's going to be channels putting something out deliberately misleading so that it can be used against people like us who repeat it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, the mainstream media puts out things that are misleading all the time, but you can't get in trouble for quoting them.
No, that's it. But what I'll do is we'll try this one, because I've got this queued up to listen to. So we're going to go most recent first for the last week. Here are the headlines from The People's Voice. So I think we've got four videos here. Top virologist warns massive, massive tsunami of mRNA vaccinated deaths on horizon. And I've got that one here. So I'll go back to their main page. Then we've got John. That was an 11 minute video, by the way. This one's a 14 minute video. John Kerry's daughter says billions of humans must die for the new world order. That was a couple of days ago. Then we've got 14-minute video 4 days ago. German government admits there was no pandemic. And then from 7 days ago, what was the length of that one? Sorry, I need to go back. 11 minutes again, 7 days ago, we've got one called WEF declares paedophilia sexual orientation must be added to LGBTQ+. So that's rumble.com, The People's Voice, and there's lots more videos on there. Have you watched any of their stuff, Maleficus? Are you at all interested?
I did watch the clip you sent me regarding the statement from the German government. Wasn't necessarily, you know, obviously it was a member of the German parliament. It wasn't the German government. On the whole, admitting there was no pandemic or no, you know, this is, it put me in mind actually of, you remember when all this first kicked off, and it kicked off big time. When I say this, I mean the COVID instance. When it first kicked off, they kicked it off in Italy big time, and I had footage at the time of an Italian minister. I've still got it knocking around somewhere, I expect. I'd have to go down and find it in my archive. But there was a footage of an Italian minister standing up in front of the Italian parliament, listing all the reasons why it was a load of nonsense, you know, i.e. all the people that were dying were above a certain age, and all that kind of thing. So it was vaguely reminiscent of that, but it wasn't per se the whole government admitting. So a little bit of clickbait there on the title, but
so it's funny you say that.
I haven't really caught up with any of the other ones that they've done. So
sorry to jump in. I'm just, because I've been listening to all of them since I found them, because the thing about them is that they're quite, you know, anyone can find, I mean, all these videos that I read out, what, they're between 11 and 14 minutes. They generally come up once every 2 days on average. We have four in a week. So, yeah, you can always find time to do that. They, like the John Kerry's daughter thing, it wasn't as cut and dried as the headline made out, a bit like the German government one. But then...
Yeah.
One of the best things I've heard recently is the video entitled Palace Insider Kate Middleton's Cancer is PSYOP to Normalise Turbo Cancer Depopulation Event. Now, they made the bold statement that she was killed in a satanic ritual a while ago. And they, the palace, this is the claims from The People's Voice, the palace know that after what happened with Diana. They've got to be very careful how to, you know, bring this out. But, you know, I thought that royalty was supposed to set an example. And they've admitted to faking, what, two or three photos? Oh, yeah, we fake those. You know, what sort of example is that to set to people? And why would you have to fake photos of someone? It just makes it sound more, you know, we talked about this last week, but it makes it sound more and more suspicious. And when you see the mainstream media, oh, you know, this person, they're saying these things about Kate, oh, they're so hurtful and all this sort of stuff. We don't believe you, okay? Channels like The People's Voice wouldn't exist if you did your job as a media, okay? So, like, last week when we talked about Andrew Bridgen, when he made that claim that a senior government minister who actually was a friend of his, who got him into politics, said it didn't matter what you say about the vaccine, it doesn't matter what you say, you've had the vaccine, so you'll die of cancer in a few years. Well, are you seriously trying to tell me that the Daily Mail aren't aware of that story? Are you seriously trying to tell me that people that they specialise in not just journalism, but say political journalism, wouldn't have an idea of who that senior political figure is that got Andrew Bridgen into politics? I mean, you probably find it on his Wikipedia page or something. And do you seriously expect me to believe that it wouldn't be worth asking, putting that statement to him that Andrew Bridgen sends, and come on, let's have your explanation then? But it's not even touched. And if it's not even touched, it causes suspicion. What are your thoughts, Malificus, before we move on?
Well, exactly. That's how all this works. This is how all this gaslighting works. And what, as I've said many times, what's the similarity between the independent and the mainstream media? Well, 6 months and 2 years. What's the difference? 6 months and 2 years, depending on the subject matter. Incidentally, just so you know, Wikipedia, turbo cancer is an anti-vaccination myth centered on the idea that people vaccinated against COVID-19, especially with mRNA vaccines, I wasn't aware there were any other ones, are suffering from high incidence of fast developing cancers. The myth, spread by a number of opponents related influencers, including doctors, has no factual basis. So there you go. You heard it first from Wikipedia.
Yeah, and the other thing is they keep all these different things, all these heart attacks and these strokes and these turbo cancers, and all, they've got all these ideas of what causes them, but I've never seen one suggestion it could have possibly been the vaccine. So they don't even throw that in there. Have you seen any mention that they actually say it could be the vaccine?
No, I've only heard members of the public or members of the independent media stating that it could be to do with the vaccine. I've never seen anything in the independent media. In fact, they steer clear of it like a hot potato. The only person that's come close to it in the UK mainstream is Anthony Bridgen. Andrew Bridgen. And he, you know, is he a bad actor? I don't know. Coming out with statements as he did, it certainly plants the seeds, doesn't it? And as I always say, all this leaked, quote-unquote, information that finds its way into the independent media, who's leaking it? Who stands to gain? So, yeah, the jury's out, Andy. You just got to keep on your mental tiptoes. That's it. You got to keep on your toes.
Yeah. And again, the one of my favourite models to use is Occam's razor. And the principle of Occam's razor would say, well, all these different cancers and strokes and conditions, they all came out after the vaccine was rolled out. So
we were preempted in the media that because of the lockdowns, there might be a high cancer rate and a high illness rate because of the lockdowns.
Maybe that was part of the purpose of the lockdowns. This is where speculation goes, when the mainstream media doesn't do its job and we have to do it for them. That's where it goes, and that's why they're trying to shut people like us up and shut people like us down. But, it's amazing, isn't it, what's going on? But, a plug for today's traditional Christian message. This is an 8-minute show. and it is entitled Persecutions of Christians Intensifies Worldwide. It was written by Dr. Peter Hammond. It's on the website. I put it up, 3 hours ago. So if you've got a spare 8 minutes and you want to hear about what's going on here, then please go back to achshow.com and have a listen to that. So, Lifkus, what have you been up to?
You will remember I was talking about having to sort my son's shed out, paid a silly amount of money, and the blooming thing leaked. So I managed to get all that sorted out, put it all back together, and I have now, as my son is living up in Wales now and has no use for the space, I have now put my studio into place there. So my friend that I make the music with has upgraded his studio computer, so I have inherited the old one, which is great. So now we have two studios in operation, so I can what we were finding is that one day a week was not enough to record, create, record and master. So basically it's to split the workload and to hopefully just make a bit more progress with it all. So I've been working on rough tracks to put down over tracks that Jeff's done already and things like that. I'll have to send some your way, actually, Andy, for a bit of fun. In fact, I can stick one in our chat now, so I'll do that. Yeah, but that's kind of what I've been up to. Music stuffs, happily, yeah. After all this time. So nice to actually be able to, if I've got 20 minutes spare, I can literally just go down and have a mess about. So, yeah, there you go. That's what I've been up to. What about yourself?
Well, just a quick shout out to Misha Popoff, our friend, who emailed us to say that he hadn't heard about Arthur Two Sheds Jackson, the Monty Python reference, for years. So it was nice of him to share that with us. And I've just made a note that Maleficus has gone from one shed to two studios. But with that in mind, I've got a few things here, actually. I've scripted the last few, but I've just got this one here. It just says braces. Now, braces in the UK can be things that you use to keep your trousers up, or things that you have put on your teeth to straighten them when you were a kid, you know, that sort of thing. But in America, braces that keep your trousers up are known as suspenders. However, in the UK, suspenders are things that women are like those stockings that you attach to a garter belt. So if you say men wear suspenders, you might be painting a very different picture to what you're trying to say. So when I'm referring to the braces, I'm referring to things that hold your trousers up that you in America, our good friends over there, refer to as suspenders. And the reason I bring this up is in recent years, probably the last 2 or 3 years, and I've just put up with it, but it doesn't matter what belt I wear, it doesn't matter what pair of trousers I wear, I'm not overweight. I'm 160, I think, 7 pounds. I'm 6 foot tall, so I'm quite slim. But apparently as men get older, they're backsides get smaller and their sort of body changes shape a bit. And that's why you see a lot of people who are a bit overweight, their trousers or pants, as you say in America, or jeans or what have you, they sit under their tummy. But I've got a situation where whenever I put them on and things like that, they just go down and down. I'm actually probably quite fashionable because you can see my boxer shorts from the back, which is something that all the kids like to do these days, from what I can understand. Especially yeah,
open for business, piece. Andy.
Yeah, that's where it comes from, isn't it? I remember Hal Turner saying that years ago, that it was something that they used in prison to show that they were up for that sort of thing. So, yeah, but basically, I remember when I was a kid, I was in a supermarket with my mother. I don't know how old I was, but it's probably one of my earliest memories. And some guy was bending down to look at something, and I saw this arse cleavage, you know, where his trousers had gone below the crack of his arse. And I just remember seeing that and feeling really quite disturbed. From that moment on, I vowed that I couldn't ever imagine that ever happening to me, but it's a memory that stayed with me, so it's something I never want to do. But I've been constantly pulling my trousers up, whatever. I can put the belt on and sometimes it's just too tight, it's uncomfortable, so you have to put it one down, and they start riding down. They never go down the whole way, but they get down to your hips. And when I've been doing stuff in the garden at my mum's last year, I mean, they were literally almost coming down all the time. I'm sorting that out somewhat differently. So I've been buying different braces, you know, off eBay, and you buy them. They're all the same size, supposedly, but you can just pick different widths and stuff like that. And I still wear my belt with them. And I was in Nando's with Amanda a couple of weeks ago, and there were three guys at a table. And I could just tell as I was walking up, they'd been sort of looking at me and making a few disparaging remarks, because they reminded me of what I would be like at their age, faced with a guy walking towards them with a sort of strange longish haircut, wearing braces with jeans and a belt. But it's just unfortunate. It's where I am. It's the only way I can think of holding them up. I got to a stage where when I did the lawn at my mum's and it was still a bit cold, I put a jumper on, and then I put my sort of ski jacket type thing on, and then I put my trousers on after that, tucked all that into my trousers and tied my belt up, and that was the only way the trousers didn't come down when I was doing the lawn. But then I found some old tracksuit bottom type things that my dad had, and they have one of those little cords on the inside that you tie up. And I've since been using that to do the lawn, and they've been fine. They don't come down. But you see, I only wear jeans. It's that or trousers I've got in my wardrobe, because I only wear shoes when I go out. I have one pair of trainers, which I haven't worn for getting on for a year now, because I only ever wore them when I was going on my rowing machine. And I haven't done that for since last June, when I started doing all the work at my mum's. So you can't really wear Chelsea boots with tracksuit bottoms, to be quite frank, and I don't want to change that now, so I'm sort of walking around in braces with jeans. But I have to wear the belt as well, otherwise, you know, I'll probably look a bit like they'd be sort of flapping about like Uncle Jesse or something like that. So that's my braces story, and I pity anyone else who gets to their late 40s, early 50s, and it happens to them too. But Malificus, any thoughts on that?
Just the fact that belt and braces, Andy, is a phrase over here, particularly when you're building something or in the building trade, or when you're constructing something, putting up a fence, anything like that. Belt and braces is always one of those phrases where you've made doubly sure something isn't going to go wrong. Belt and braces.
Yeah, I never thought of that. Well, as soon as you said the expression, I recognise the expression, but I kind of... I needed you really to clarify what it meant. No, it's an interesting one. I mean, the other weird thing, right, these are all one size, and I've had to, literally, you think of like where the clip-on braces goes to adjust it, generally it'll be up near someone's shoulder. Well, on all the ones that I've bought, they're right down about an inch or two above the clip to the trousers or the jeans. And so I don't know how anyone taller than me or broader than me would fit into these things, you know? So, but they're one size. You can't order different sizes. Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy, isn't it? But anyway, they fit me, so I'm not going to... There's enough to moan about without going on a little fishing trip to find something else. But I was looking for some fluoride-free toothpaste. This is my scripted stuff now. Looking for some fluoride-free toothpaste, which is always a challenge on the high street or in the mall, as the one I get by post tastes pretty horrible. I wonder why. But regardless, I found one that should make you think wistfully about the halcyon days of your youth, Malificus. Hemp toothpaste. So what do you have to say to that?
Hemp toothpaste? Well, I've never tried it. Not even in my heyday as a teenager.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, on the back, it was only a pound. I got it in a shop called Savers in the UK. It's a chain. And not only does it consist of a large 100ml tube, which is twice the size, incidentally, of the ones that I was sending off for, that were £4 or £5 each for a 50ml tube, mm-hmm. but it also contains a free toothbrush, which... kind of matches the packaging. The packaging's a cream and green colour, as is the toothbrush, but it's a sort of toothbrush you get given on a plane. You know, I use a special Colgate Total thing, and this is, I wouldn't really use this apart from to sort of maybe clean around the taps of the bath. So I'll put that down for the moment. But I tried it, and I have to say the taste is a really nice tasting toothpaste. It's really sort of, you know, it's a very minty kind of jolts you when you have it. But then yesterday, I started feeling a bit funny afterwards, and I thought, I can't be getting some sort of high off hemp toothpaste, can I? So I was looking it all up, and no one reported any problems, and I've actually used it twice in the last hour, really, because one other thing that I do to keep my teeth clean is if you get coconut oil and you put about a teaspoonful in your mouth and then you swill it round for about 15 minutes, then afterwards, because your teeth are all oily, you're going to need to clean them again. So what I tend to do, I have my breakfast and then I clean my teeth to get all them clean after breakfast. Then I did the coconut oil, then I had to clean them to get all the coconut oil off. So two lots in an hour, and I feel okay. But yesterday I was feeling a bit strange, and I thought, you know, I know that when they talk about this hemp stuff anyway, they take the THC out and stuff like that. But I'll tell you what it says for hemp. Natural organic ingredients, cannabis sativa seed oil, in brackets hemp oil. But I can't imagine that any of it that's in there would be in such a minuscule quantity. I can't imagine it would have any effect on you. What do you think, Malefkas?
No, so you can buy hemp seeds for cooking as well. And hemp, originally, in its original form, hemp used to grow in the hedgerows here in the UK. There was no high to it at all. And hemp seeds contain no high at all. So the THC is created on the plant as little sort of blobs of resin all over the plant in its later stages of life. The seeds themselves contain none of that, and the oil that you're talking about is pressed from the hemp seeds, so it's impossible to get high off of the seeds. As I say, you can buy hemp seeds for cooking. You can buy hemp seeds from health shops, all that kind of thing. A friend of mine years ago bought bags and bags and bags of these hemp seeds and went around scattering them in hedgerows in the hope that, you know, he'd fool people into thinking that there was cannabis growing everywhere. So, they are readily available from health shops, all that kind of thing, and there is no high whatsoever. The plant has to develop. All that high isn't encapsulated in the seed, that it has to be cultivated from the seed. So yeah, you're quite safe, Andy.
Well, I thank you I knew that you'd know all about this, and it's not just because of the hemp aspect, but it's
my
just
misspent youth.
No, funny enough, that was the thing. It was something like this. Even if we were talking about something not hemp but some other thing, it's the sort of thing that I know that you will always know about. But on that basis, having tried it again today, I'm going to buy a few in, because they are on Amazon, funnily enough, and there's all these people complaining on Amazon because they're about £3.80, £4 each on there, whereas you get them for a pound in the Savers shop. And it says manufactured date October 2023, expiry date October 2026. So you're going to get a good 3 years on it, 2.5 at the moment, and I may as well get some of these in because they seem to be okay. But finally, I did the only cooking I know how to do, a bolognese sauce in a big wok. And I moved more of my stuff back to my flat from my mum's, my first record player, and my personal CD player collection. As when something like the eclipse is coming up, whilst 90% of me says, I've heard this all before, and nothing ever happens, there's still that 10% that says, maybe this is it. Although how cooking 18 portions of bolognese sauce and bringing over a Boots Phillips record player I don't even plan to plug in is going to help me with that, I'll never know. But that being said, I've got the penultimate Tom Sharp satire, in which I read a brief extract from each of his 16 books. This is the 15th one, obviously. It's called The Gropes. It was originally published in 2009, and I'm actually starting from the very beginning, chapter one. And so if you like it, you could always go and get the book, or you might find something online or what have you, and carry on from where I left off. But here we go. It is one of the more surprising facts about Old England that one can still find families living in the same houses their ancestors built centuries before, and on land that has belonged to them since before the Norman Conquest. The Gropes of Grope Hall are one such family. Neither rich nor titled, and having never excited the envy of their more powerful and influential neighbours, the Gropes had kept their heads down, worked fields still bearing the same names as they had in the 12th century, and had gone about their business without taking the slightest interest in politics, religion, or anything else that could have got them into trouble. In most cases, this was not due to any deliberate policy. On the contrary, it had to do with inertia and the determination not to be burdened with ambitious and able offspring. The Gropes of Grope Hall can be found in the county of Northumberland. They are said to be able to trace their ancestry back to a Danish Viking, one Orgard the Pale, who had been so seasick on the voyage over the North Sea that he had deserted the raiding party while it was sacking the nunnery at Elmouth. Instead of raping nuns, as he was supposed to do, he had thrown himself on the mercy of a skivvy he had come across in the bakehouse, who was trying to make up her mind whether or not she wanted to be raped. Not being in the least beautiful and having twice been turned down by Viking raiding parties, Ursula Grope was delighted to be chosen by the handsome Orgard, and led him away from the appalling orgy in the sack nunnery to the isolated valley of Mosedale and the sod hut in which she had been born. The return of the daughter he had hoped he had seen the last of, and in the company of the enormous Orgard the Pale, had so terrified her father, a simple swineherd, that he hadn't waited to find out the Viking real intentions, but had taken to his heels and was last heard of near York selling hot chestnuts. Having saved Orgard from the horrors of the return journey to Denmark, Ursula insisted that he save her honour as an unraped nun and do his duty by her. It is thus that the House of Grope is said to have been created. Orgard changed his name to Grope, and so alarmed were the few inhabitants of Mosedale by his size and awful melancholy that Ursula, now Mrs. Grope, was in time able to take possession of their thousands of acres of uninhabited moorland and eventually to establish the Grope dynasty. As the centuries passed, the family legend and the dark secret of their origins encouraged succeeding generations of Gropes to keep themselves to themselves. They need hardly have bothered. The strain of melancholy and aversion to travel that had so afflicted Orgard continued in the Grope blood. But it was the Grope women whose influence was most profound. To be twice rejected by Vikings, not normally discriminating in their choice of victims, as unworthy of violation, had clearly left a psychological scar on the founding mother. Having secured Orgard, she was determined never to let him go. She was also determined to hang on to the thousands of acres that his gloomy aspect and dangerous reputation had secured. That the Viking was in fact a deserter, and terrified of the sea, made both tasks easy. Orgard was always at home, and refused even to go to the market in Brithbury or to the annual pig gelding fair and mud wrestling on Welwick Fell. It was left to his wife and their five daughters to drive hard bargains at the market and indulge in the dubious activities at the fair. Since the daughters took after their father in size and strength and had inherited his red hair, while combining these assets with the unprepossessing looks and determination of their mother, the result of the said mud wrestling matches was never in doubt. Here, as in all matters involving the Grope women, the female line prevailed. Indeed, whereas in every other family, the eldest son succeeded to the estate, with the Gropes, it was the eldest daughter who took over the Grope acres. So a little bit of a longer one there, but it is the second to last one. Maleficus, any comments before we move on?
I just like the fact that his accolade after his name was The Pale. Obviously Scandinavian and so renowned to be sort of pale, of very pale skin, that kind of thing. So that was funny.
Yeah,
obviously pale as well from his odious sea crossing.
Indeed, yes. And before we get into this week's The People Who Failed to Join Sven Longshanks in Prison and How They Did It segment of the show, I was listening to Mark Collett's show with Laura Towler that you can find on his BitChute channel. Well, obviously, Mark Collett BitChute channel. You just go to BitChute.com, type Mark Collett in, the same way as if you wanted to get Richie from Boston's channel that I mentioned earlier. And they did a show on what's going on with these political prisoners of ours. So they talked about Sam Melia, they talked about James Costello, they talked about Chris Kearney, and they talked about Sven Longshanks. And he's now, I believe, in a Category C prison. He's almost in like an apartment. He has his own cooking facilities that he can use and things like that in there. And he's apparently, this is according to Mark Collett and Laura Towler, he's in better health than he was when he was not in prison. So he's actually been given better medical care for his numerous medical conditions. And the latest that they have on him is that he has a provisional release date of the end of August. So that means this section will be going for another pretty much 5 months. But any comments on that, Malifkus, before we get into it?
Well, that's good news. That's good news. Not that he should be there in the blooming first place, but it's good news that his circumstances are better. So, and just want to say thanks to all those people that have actually taken the time to send out postcards, letters, whatever. I'm sure it's a big boost for Sven.
Yeah, and the other thing is that a lot of what he's achieved in there has been due to the fact that he's been so well behaved, which again indicates that he's not a criminal and shouldn't be in there in the first place. You know, so exactly. I imagine a lot of the prison staff are probably quite happy to have people like that in there because, you know, it's one less person to worry about shanking them or something like that, you know.
And
whereas we covered listen to the And Finally headline coming up, but I'm going to do the blurb at the beginning. Now for this week's The People Who Failed to Join Sven Longshanks in Prison and How They Did It segment of the show, which is brought to you courtesy of the British justice system. Sven Longshanks was sent to prison for 2.5 years on May the 15th, 2023, for comments he made on his radio show, the archives of which are still available on RadioAlbion.com, a station you could simply stop listening to if you chose to do so, in the same way I stopped listening to the BBC over a year ago when I chose not to renew my television licence. So here are this week's People Who Failed to Join Sven Longshanks in Prison and How They Did It. First up, creepy Scots nurse who massaged colleague's buttock on hospital ward avoids jail. Next, Oxford Mail, Swindon man avoids jail for sexually assaulting young girl. Next, Daily Mail, acid attack victim's fury after she was forced to wait nearly 3 years for her ex-boyfriend to face justice after he drunkenly threw chemical over her only to see him spared jail. Next, Shropshire Star, Shrewsbury paedophile twice spared jail, finally locked up for having 180,000 illegal images on 12 different computers. And here are another people who've been spared jail a couple of times. The Independent revealed hundreds of repeat knife offenders spared jail despite two strikes crackdown. Whilst I can present many, many more headlines, that concludes this week's The People Who Failed to Join Sven Longshanks in Prison and How They Did It segment. But Malifkus, do you have any headlines for us before we close it up? Over to you.
I do, actually. So here we go. A crack cocaine dealer who dressed as a carer to try and bamboozle police avoids prison sentence. Aleo Buelu, I think that's how you pronounce his name, 46 years old, was jailed in 2006 after he was found in possession of a suitcase that contained a quantity of crack cocaine, the court was told. He's now pleaded guilty to being concerned in a supply of cocaine as the Aberdeen Sheriff, this man has been allowed to walk free despite admitting being involved in a crack cocaine operation. Well, that's nice, isn't it? So There's one for you, Andy. And the other one I've got here is British billionaire Joe Lewis avoids US prison after insider trading case. Now, I know this isn't the UK, but he is a UK guy, so it is worth mentioning. He's also, so not only is he the former owner of Tottenham Football Club, Andy, he's also a founder of the Tavistock Institute. So he's been done for insider trading, but because of his old age and ill health, he's been given a suspended sentence. So there you go. So on with the whole thing about avoiding prison, etc., and the hate speech, you know, like Sven has been locked up for. Scotland this week, or the week just gone, has Scotland's new hate crime law comes into force. This was 5 days ago. That's from the BBC. The Telegraph here is reporting that police in Scotland are forced to pay overtime to deal with the deluge of hate crime complaints that are coming in. Well, didn't see that coming, did we? And it says, so BBC article here, what is Scotland's hate crime law and how does it work? Scotland's new hate crime law came into force on April the 1st. It deals with vigorous issues, but the two main ones are stirring up hatred and offences aggravated by prejudice. So stirring up hatred constitutes this. The new law creates a new crime of stirring up hatred relating to protected characteristics. A person commits an offence if they communicate material or behave in a manner that, quote, that a responsible person would consider threatening or abusive, with the intention of stirring up hatred based on either age, disability, religion, or in the case of social cultural group, perceived religious affiliation, sexual orientation, transgender identity, various insex characteristics, sometimes being known as intersex. So so the maximum sentence for stirring up hatred is 7 years imprisonment. And it says the bar of this offence remains lower than for other protected characteristics. It also includes insulting behaviour, as the prosecution will only need to prove that stirring up hatred was likely rather than intended. Likely rather than intended. So that screams about Sam Melia's case, doesn't it? So that has set a precedent. It's so frustrating to see this going on. And I know there's various people. I know people in the UK. There was a guy streaming on Twitch who was outraged about the fact that you could get 7 years in prison in Scotland for saying things that he was saying on his Twitch stream. But, you know, as always, people are just sitting back and going, oh, well, you know, what can we do about it? Well, apart from those, that is, that are giving the Scottish police a deluge of hate crime complaints. Back to you, Andy. I'm just so frustrated, let's put it that way, with this whole sentiment. The public should be stood up by now going, you know, taking control back and saying, you know, we're not standing for any of this. But, what can we do about it? We'll just have to complain instead.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mention that, because it's amazing to me how all these people that pass laws regarding tolerance are so intolerant of people they disagree with. Okay, they always use tolerance as the basis for passing laws, but they essentially say that if you say things we don't like, you can go to jail for 7 years. So if that isn't an example of intolerance, I don't know what is. But I'll give you another couple of shocking examples of intolerance. On the show I mentioned, the Mark Collett Show with Laura Taylor, summing up these prisoners, there's been cases where if you're a prominent person in, say, a nationalist group that the government don't like, they've been ordered, the prison, not to allow your letters to get through to the prisoner or theirs to get through to you. And it got to the level that Laura Taylor said they'd actually been in touch with the governor of a prison where I believe Sven Longshanks was, and the governor said, no, this is not right, because, you know, these people are in prison and they can't be denied access to people who are their friends, whatever their beliefs, because, you know, they're at a very vulnerable time and this is when they're going to need the support group the most. But the usual names came up, like Prevent. They were actually going in and saying, right, we want to make you to make sure they can't communicate with this person or that person. It just goes to show that there's no level to which these people will not plunge in order to continue persecuting someone. They've already managed to get locked up. They'll go after them while they're in prison as well. So these are the sort of people that you're dealing with that the government pay money to. They're paying these organisations money to advise them on what laws to have. And it's just disgraceful, absolutely disgraceful. And the Christian premise of forgiveness and understanding, it goes to show how these groups that go on about tolerance are the most unforgiving groups that you will find out there. And for me, it all boils down to what I've said before. We went back to that ADL competition in 1998, won by Ribbikoff, where they were law students were asked to draft hate speech, hate crimes legislation. And Ribbikoff's was one of the most draconian, and it won the prize. Basically, we don't want anyone to say things about that essentially are going to go against our belief system. And if they do, we should have the right to lock them up. And that is why we are where we are today. And it's just a great shame that I do this show now, because I've done my bit. You know, I did a couple of books, and that was my contribution. And I'm not going to just go out and keep pushing that when I've done my bit. Other people need to step up and do things themselves that they believe. But unfortunately, mine didn't have the effect that it needed at the time. That should have been picked up by the government then and there, looked at the claims. Look, you know, this guy's saying about this shadowy group controlling banks and all that. If they'd have been dealt with then and had the power taken away from them, then they wouldn't have the power that they've got today, trying to lock all these people up and people literally walking around. They're frightened of actually questioning the laws because they're worried that that might get them locked up. And then at the same breath, we're told, oh, your democratic right to free speech in the West. It's a joke. And it's because the powers that should not be have got the whole thing sewn up. They've got the money sewn up with the banking system. They've got the media sewn up with their control of the mainstream media. They've got the government sewn up with their control over politicians for a variety of nefarious ways. As I said, the Illuminati for pillars that they set up in 1776 was to get people in influential positions to control them via monetary or sex blackmail. Well, as I've said before about the Epstein situation, as far as I'm concerned, that was just like a franchise of a fast food restaurant. Okay, the Epstein one. And you've got more of those franchises, not just throughout America, but throughout the world. And they're doing their job, which basically means that people, the politicians that are supposed to be looking after our interests, are looking after this controlling group's interest. And it's all predicted in the Bible. I needn't have written either of my books. I need have just drawn people's attention to certain books in the Bible. And what's going on today is all predicted. So I'm going to shut up now because I could keep going on this. But Maleficus, any comments before we move on?
Well, yeah, it's like it's no different to Rowan Atkinson's speech on the reforming the Section 5 of the Public Order Act. And what I really like about that speech is that, it, you know, and you covered it in the beginning in what you said. And that is, he said, you know, we're only intolerant of one thing, and that is intolerance itself. And then you realise that you're just replacing one intolerance for another. and just a comment as well on the whole Epstein thing, none of the people that they were trafficking children to and for have been brought to justice. None of them.
No.
So,
and they've got the lists. They say the lists are there, don't they? But they don't bring any of them out.
No.
So, no,
and they dangle, like, you know, they leak the lists also to the independent media so that the independent media get their claws into it and go, oh, look, we've got a list here. And it's plausible deniability on their part, because obviously it's leaked, quote unquote. So the public are left with a load of ifs, buts and maybes and don't really know where to run or go with it because, you know, the narrative, the information on the narrative has been controlled.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's just, it's very frustrating. I feel a sense of failure with, you know, my book. I was so, at the time, I mean, I even wrote subsequent introductions to, you know, kind of criticise my naivety. I really thought someone would see this and they'd be like, you know, we've got to look into this. This is interesting stuff. But all they did was, the work they did on it was to try and suppress it. And the funny thing is all these people, the majority of them that are actually doing the bidding of this controlling group will end up being destroyed by them also. We've seen that happen historically. Those who, you know, look at things like the French Revolution, the people that kind of started it all off, they all lost their heads as well, didn't they, Malificus?
Right, look at what happened to Trotsky.
Yeah, oh, exactly, and look at that too. So the whole thing, and his real name was Lev Bronstein, and he lived in New York City. And for some reason, he decided to change his name to Trotsky. I wonder why that is. He's not the first person who would change his name, and we'll just leave that there. But that doesn't happen so much these days. The need to change names is no longer, it seems to be, something that's required. But let's move on to...
Well, before we do, just to say, your disappointment in your book, Andy, or the lack of reaction that your book caused, would only be mirrored by my granddad's own, you know, own feelings towards his book, I'm sure. And that was all the way back in 1954. I'm sure he thought it would make a difference. And indeed, probably over time it has, but to a very small amount of people. It sold 7,000 copies in its first year, and after, I think, by the end of the 60s, the publishing company was forced pretty much to end up working out of a disused railway carriage at Exeter St. David's Station. So in, you know, a railway station in the southwest here. So, you know, Britain's publishing was eventually forced under. So.
Yeah, no, it's and the thing is, you see, when I put the Synagogue of Satan out initially, what I did in the, that was 2006, and then Tex Mars published it when it really took off in March of 2007, because my version was only 500 copies, and I couldn't sell it on Amazon because it had no barcode on it, stuff like that. I wouldn't even know how to do it back then. But Tex Mars really got it out there. And then I bought out the revised, not revised, there was nothing changed, there were only things added. There was one thing I was asked to change, and that was the Schicklgruber stuff surrounding Adolf Hitler and whether he was a secret Rothschild and stuff. I counterbalance that with other things, claims about Adolf Hitler that aren't so detrimental as that. And really, you know, the book is what I've discovered over time, and it's up to people to, you know, they can agree with some of that, all of it, none of it. The alternatives are already out there in the mainstream, and we see how reliable they've been over time. But when I did the updated, expanded, uncensored version, which you can get on moneytreepublishing.com, I did that about 5 years after I put my version together. And in that time, I still did the same research. Any things that I learned, I noted them down on little post-it pads and kept stacks of those and what have you when I'd be listening to things and subsequently looking things up just to kind of keep the project going, which I never thought I'd do a second book. But also during that time, I got to read a lot of books that I hadn't got round to reading the first time, and one of them was Malificus' granddad's book, Hidden Government. And I was able to then put choice quotes from those books in the book. One book I never got to that we referenced last week was Douglas Reed's The Controversy of Zion. I don't know if I ever had a copy. I think I might have had a copy. It is huge. The only book I can equate to that is a book called Which Way Western Man, which was something the National Alliance offered years ago, and it was by a guy who was a former monk. And there were some pages where the footnotes occupied more than the actual text of the book. But yeah, I never got to that. But I gave it a good shot. And I believe that certainly when I was doing shows and talking about that sort of thing, I would have a copy of the book next to me with the index because I'm satisfied with my information. The other thing is that when Money Tree Publishing brought the book out, they not only reproofread it, Dave Gahari, but they also fact-check it, but not in the way fact-checking is done by the powers that should not be. So I got someone else not just to, you know, do another proofread for me, but do a fact read. And there was nothing that came back disputed. So I felt vindicated further by that. But that being said, do you want to make any comments about where they can get your granddad's book quickly, Melissa?
Oh, yeah, sure. Candour.org.uk, CANDOUR. Go on and support the A.K. Chesterton Trust and the very thing that my granddad helped start up. And just to reiterate, I don't make anything from the sales of granddad's book. It all goes back into the A.K. Chesterton Trust. So there you go.
Thank you so much, Maleficus. There you go, folks. Now, as of December the 1st, 2022, we have a total of 2,362 people having died after taking the fake vaccine and 474,018 people having been injured after taking the fake vaccine. These figures were published on the British government's website page entitled Coronavirus COVID-19 Vaccine Adverse Reactions and were aggregated from the totals of the five vaccine analysis prints linked to on that page. I say were because the British government are no longer publishing these, as whilst their website page still exists, the five vaccine analysis prints have now been deleted from it, so I have absolutely no idea of the official figures today. Also, the UK government petition Stop the Online Safety Bill, Keep Free Speech Free, which as of this time last week had 399 signatures, including Shelley's, Maleficus's and mine. As of yesterday, it has 454 signatures, so 45 in a week. What that tells me is someone else must have reported it on one of their shows that has a far greater listener base than ours. But Maleficus, what say you?
Yeah, well, you never know where it's been put out, Andy. 45 listeners. Crikey. I'm just wondering who that could be. Maybe it could be GB News. GB News over here. I've stumbled across an interesting subject on Reddit, not a place that I go to all that often, but this was a link sent to me by one of the listeners. And interestingly enough, GB News, everyone is sort of, a lot of people rave about GB News, whether they like them or hate them, but they're a very, they're a mainstream news broadcasting service over here. Many of our listeners will be familiar with a guy who's on there quite often called Neil Oliver, who speaks an awful lot of sense very clearly and is very concise in how he puts his little speeches together. They are very good. GB News, as I say, often cover what we would call the adverse side of the narrative when it comes to the mainstream. This little article anyway, GB News losses up 38% to 42.4 million, giving the channel a total deficit of 76 million since its launch. That's UK pounds sterling, by the way. So apparently GB News has a total deficit of 76 million pounds since its launch. Maybe that's down to their small listener base of the 45 that you've just mentioned. If that's the case, who's paying for this, Andy? Why are they paying 76 million so far to keep this channel afloat? The mind boggles.
It does, doesn't it? And isn't it interesting how, you know, the funding and things like the PayPal that I used to rely on gets shut down over here, but someone's still able to fund that. It sounds like they know that there's always going to be an opposition, but who was it that said that, you know, we don't mind having an opposition as long as we control it, Maleficus?
I think it was Lenin, wasn't it? The best way to beat the opposition is to be the opposition.
There you go. So I can't say that for GB News because I don't know. But I do know this, that if I was seven, there'd be no one that would keep me going, £76 million in debt. I've had to use my own money, as you know, to fund this operation when I was still relying on just the donations and book sales to keep it going. And I put, I think, about $3,000 a year into it to build up what I needed. But I still believe that that was some of the best money that I ever spent to get the word out to people. But that being said, let's go back to Maleficus for his The Great Distraction segment of the show. So, Maleficus, what have you got for us today?
Well, okay, thanks, Andy. So, be afraid. Be very afraid, folks. Warning over deadly virus you've never heard of that's like flu and has no vaccine. The human metapneumovirus is a lesser-known respiratory virus. I'll get my words straight in a minute. That has 10% has a 10% mortality rate, and there's no vaccine to protect against it. So everyone, be very afraid. You later find out that the 10% mortality rate, when you read through the article, is down to people that are already "quote unquote" immunocompromised cancer patients, you know, elderly, infirm, that kind of thing. And the most common symptoms include, folks, common cold or flu-like symptoms: cough, runny nose, nasal congestion, fever, and/or chills, asthma flare-ups for those of you who are asthma sufferers, a sore throat, wheezing, and a shortness of breath. So it sounds like every other influenza, cold, flu virus that goes, every other respiratory virus that you've ever heard of sounds exactly like that, doesn't it? So it's rather like, why we've got to name everything now. So it was rather like we've just been battered in the UK by Storm Kathleen. Why is Storm Kathleen memorable? Well, because we gave it a name. Whereas before it was like, oh, it was windy last night, wasn't it? Other than that, you know, and this is the same thing with all these different, you know, it's now no longer is it, oh, don't get too close, mate. I got a bit of a cold, or I got a bit of a runny nose. You know, now, no, it's metapneumovirus, or it's COVID, or it's whatever. And we have to split, you know, segment, compartmentalize, even now just lesser respiratory diseases or illnesses. It's just getting ridiculous. So yes, be afraid, be very afraid, people. So Mail Online article here, going on from what I said last week about the forecasted rise in cancer rates, etc., miraculously, as we said earlier, forecasted about 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago. Mail Online article, chemo overdose, the silent crisis killing hundreds of Americans each year and hospitalizes up to 1 in 50. So about 1 in 1,000 Americans die from chemotherapy every year, research shows. Experts warn genetic deficiencies could make chemo toxic for some patients. Well, chemo is toxic for all patients. They attempt to poison the cancer, and at the same time, they poison you. Just ask my bandmate's best mate, who died a few years back, died a few weeks back. You know, they said, Mr. Grigg, you do realize we are trying to poison the cancer, and at the same time, we will be poisoning you. So, you know, what they're saying is that people are getting too much chemo and they're getting overdosed, and that's what's killing them. The beggar's belief. Anyway, so here we go. This is another Mail Online article. NHS can't cope with the avalanche of autism and ADHD diagnosis, warn experts amid unprecedented five-fold increase in referrals. Health leaders said it was impossible to imagine how the NHS would cope. So NHS to probe the rise in kids and adults being told they have ADHD. Here we go. Guardian article. The sudden rise of ADHD. What is behind the rocketing rates of this life-changing diagnosis? Just over a decade ago, autism and ADHD were thought to be mutually exclusive. But in recent years, it has all changed. I wonder how. Anyway, moving on from that, but to carry on from a subject that I touched on last week, the Financial Times this week is saying that support for changes in the law on assisted dying grows across the UK. Okay, separate article here, The Guardian, why the 15-minute city has taken off in Paris but has become a controversial idea in the UK. Oh, well, there we go. All to do with climate, I'm sure. More climate news here, and this doesn't revolve around the fact that Greta Thunberg has just been detained again for blocking a road somewhere in Europe. lots of idiots about still. So, you know, why all this is coming about? So we've got an article here from scientificamerica.com. It's never too late to take climate action. The depiction of the climate crisis as a cliff, once we fall off the edge, it's game over, is nonsense, apparently. And again, here, look, article from the Harvard Gazette. Forget the doomers. Warming can be stopped, says climate scientist. Why would this be the case? Maybe because after we reach the drop off the cliff point, everyone will lose interest because they know that it's all fake. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. Or maybe we have a thing over here going on at the moment. MPs accuse, this is an article from The Guardian, MPs accuse Charity Commission of legal breach over climate skeptic think tank. Regulator faces accusation of acting unlawfully in its investigation of the Global Warming Policy Foundation. So the Charity Commission is facing a legal challenge by MPs over its failure to investigate campaigning by a think tank that questions climate science. So basically, they don't like what this think tank is finding, so they're finding legal loopholes to deal with them accordingly. But they're basically, this charity commission is basically saying that basically what they're trying to do, they've urged the regulator to strip the Global Warming Policy Foundation of its charitable status, arguing it does not meet its aims as a charity and in fact is a lobbying organization. So I'll leave that up for you good listeners to mull over for yourself. Onwards with the great distraction. The UK has failed to prepare itself for war, warn former defence ministers. And another article, it's time the UK increased its defence spending to wartime levels. A Sky News here. The UK should lead the way on defence spending as the threat now much greater than the Cold War, ex-minister says. Another Sky News article. Former Armed Forces Minister James Heapy says the UK must prepare for war despite being a long way behind. And the UK Defence Journal, I didn't realise there was such a thing, but I stumbled across it this morning. The UK Defence Journal says a new government command paper sets out the full scale of the UK's national nuclear endeavour. So, yeah, we should be spending way more, apparently, on defence, etc., etc., and we should be gearing up for war. This is what they're telling us, isn't it? I don't know how cohesive the country will be in that respect, particularly as a lot of the people in this country now are very disenfranchised about what the country is about, regardless of whether they are new arrivals or whether they've ancestrally been on this patch of land for a long time. So all this along the lines, or at the same time that we've got article from the Telegraph here, Israel arms embargo would risk confidence in the UK, former Attorney General warns. Those calling on Britain to stop selling weapons to Israel are virtue signalling, according to Sir Michael Ellis. Virtue signalling. It says here, a Guardian article, majority of voters in the UK back banning arms sales to Israel. Well, you know, you'd think if we've got to gear up our own defence, why would we be selling it all to another country? But as the former Prime Minister Boris Johnson says on a BBC News article 11 hours ago, it would be shameful to call for the UK to end arms sales to Israel. So there we go. There ends the great distraction. Andy, back to you.
Thank you, Maleficus. Yes, great job there. And, we had a little crash, folks, that you wouldn't be aware of till now. So I didn't have my page open, which I should have done, so I'm opening it up now. And now it's time for some of this week's Daily Mail articles that didn't end up behind their Mail Plus paywall. First up, campaigners, told the BBC about staff's anti-Semitism 18 months ago from the staff reporter who called Israel a terrorist apartheid state to the freelancer who appeared to justify the October the 7th attacks. Next, the Met police have lost control of the streets. Force faces questions over swastika row at pro-Palestine protest after telling Jewish woman the symbol needed to be taken in context, as Labour shadow minister says footage is very concerning. Next, terror-backing American military veteran 77, who held Stand With Hamas sign at Sheffield pro-Palestine protest after October the 7th attack, refuses to pay £2,300 in fines and costs. Next, Netflix fans go wild over absolutely brilliant new drama, but are surprised by a shock cameo. Why ask Andrew Bridgen about the MP that he alleged said he'd be dead of cancer in a few years because he'd taken the vaccine, when you could be reporting on a Netflix show? Daily Mail, indeed. Next, celebrated rabbi returns £2.3 million to Jewish charities after he held the funds in his own personal accounts for years. Next, lesbians are more likely to have orgasms than straight women, new study suggests. Next, shocking moment, Hillary Clinton is branded a super predator while husband Bill is told he's a piece of shit to his face by anti-Israel protesters in New York City. And finally, meet Goldilocks, the breedless dog of the future. All breeds would merge into one within just 5 years without humans, expert claims. Here's what it would look like. And that article was, of course, brought to you courtesy of Count Kudenhove Kalergi's pet poodle. Okay, that's almost it for me. So, Maleficus, please close out your contribution to today's show with your news roundup of the week. The floor is yours.
Okie dokie. Well, I've already told you guys I had GB News lined up for this one, but I've already told you guys all about GB News's losses. Again, unfathomable how a news station can keep going when they're 76 million in debt. Basically, it's just ridiculous.
Sounds a bit like YouTube. Sorry to jump in. Do you remember that the first few years, YouTube, didn't it lose billions or something ridiculous? And people were thinking, you know, who's financing this to keep it on the air? And then suddenly, like so many things, once they get the monopoly, that's when the shutters come down and all the censorship starts. How many times have we seen that in history, Maleficus?
It's just history repeating itself. Those who don't remember their history are condemned to repeat it, George Santayana. So, an article here from Politico EU, and that is UK quits Erasmus because of Brits' poor language skills. Britain turned down an offer to remain a member of the Cultural Exchange Programme after Brexit. Now, the Cultural Exchange Programme is the EU's Erasmus Plus student exchange scheme, essentially allows children to travel all over Europe as you get a foreign exchange student come over. I remember my sister years ago had a German foreign exchange student come over, and she then Bianca, I think her name was, and then she a few weeks later went over to stay with Bianca and her family. Well, the UK is opting out of this apparently because of Britain's pupils' poor language skills. Now, something has occurred over the period of when I was a kid to now that has stopped British students being so good at other languages. I wonder what that is. Answers on the back of a postcard, or you can just simply email me at maleficus@outlook.com with your summations as to why that might be the case. Anyway, that aside, and on maybe on a similar vein, depending on what your train of thought is, government website document here, www.gov.uk, new laws to cut migration and put British workers first. has been put into force. The changes that are now in force will slash migration, apparently, and prevent undercutting of British workers by employers looking to recruit cheap labour from overseas. What do they class as British would be the question I would ask. So this one's an interesting one for you, Andy. The Guardian: UK churches are keen to host heavy metal bands after a duet with an organ player is a hit. After a bonkers gig at Huddersfield Town Hall, paired with doom metal bands and a pipe organist, churches are keen to get in on the act. Oh, you do surprise me. You do surprise me. So, another government article here from the gov.uk. New Green... Right, hold it together for this one. New green international shipping routes backed by government funding. Investment into zero emissions routes to and from the UK will help create long-term sustainability and keep our waters clean. The government launches a bidding process for a 1.5 million pot, 1.5 million UK pound sterling pot to fulfil net zero commitments, create jobs and grow the economy without imposing additional costs to taxpayers. Well, where did that 1.5 million come from in the first place? So this revolves around plotting new routes, across the ocean that will apparently have... Just plotting new routes, Andy, it's just automatically going to make it zero emissions, isn't it? You know, anyway, never mind. To finish up with another government article here, gov.uk. UK government rewards work with £701 a year boost for workers in Wales. So you remember, Andy, years ago I complained that I wanted a pay rise in the gardening department I was in, and... the head gardener got a 3 pence an hour pay rise. Us two lowly gardeners got a 2 pence an hour pay rise, and our part-time gardener got a 1 pence an hour pay rise. Obviously, what an absolute mickey take. So the workers in Wales will be very happy at their, on average, £2 a day increase or decrease in taxes. So the average worker in Wales, Andy, is going to be £701 a year better off as the government cuts taxes. What a drop in the ocean. Anyway, back to you.
Thank you so much, Maleficus. Okay, last item. Daily Mail headline. Trainee anaesthetist who played God by stealing drugs from hospital before using them to sedate his girlfriend so he could fuck her senseless. If that's a medical term, it would explain why doctors write in Latin. Is jailed for more than 2 years. On that bombshell, you have been listening to The Limeys, episode 162, The Show at the End of the Universe. We Limeys will be back with you next Sunday. Peter and I will be back with you on Tuesday. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week. And bye for now.